Tax collectors in Jesus' day were not nice. They weren't generous, forgiving, or kind. They snarled when you talked, snarled when they talked. And they were built like front row Fords, or had a couple of lads standing behind them that fitted that description. Tax collectors were extortionists. What's changed, you say? The Romans and local rulers wanted, say, 30% of your produce. They'd get it via the collectors. But they didn't pay the collectors. So collectors, the successful ones, asked for another, say, 20%. And if they didn't get that total of 50%, they beat it out of you. Tax collectors were not popular. Funny that. You would never invite one for dinner, and you would never accept an invitation to their place if you wanted to keep your fingernails intact. So in short, they were scumbags, lowlife, those who cuddle up to the occupation forces. You would not want your daughter to go out with one, and you would never invite one for dinner. Which was the problem. Jesus, the coolest rabbi in town, the one everyone was talking about and wanted for dinner, accepted your invitation to dine and it's a big and, brought along Matthew and his collector mates. You sure you really want Jesus for dinner? Matthew 9, verses 10 and 11. And as Jesus sat at dinner in the house, that's your house, many tax collectors and other undesirables were sitting with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees, the morality police, saw this, they said to his disciples, "You guys are nuts." And there's this silence in the text before Jesus pipes up. But note the disciples have got no answer. I suspect that they too thought this was nuts. And I suspect too they were scared to open their mouths. How do you really accommodate an undesirable guest like a tax collector? No one trusts him, no one wants him. But he comes as part of the Jesus package. What boundaries do you impose? Will he keep to them? What happens if he doesn't? It's very risky, and there are no easy answers. Matthew, I'm guessing, is also thinking, this is nuts. This is a party for nice, religious people, and I aren't one of them. He gets the vibe. He's good at picking up the "we are scared of you" vibe. He knows you don't want him in your house. He can see through that welcoming, beatific smile. Matthew knows how to scare people. But he doesn't know how to make people like him. He can do fear. He can't do love. But he wants to do love. He wants to believe he can do love. Jesus makes him believe he can do love. Jesus makes him believe he's really a diamond, despite his roughness. He just needs to have faith. But it's risky. The story of Matthew, in Hebrew his name means gift of God, is the foundational story of this church. It's a story of provocative hospitality beyond the boundaries of what is acceptable or manageable. It's a story of provocative hospitality that is uncomfortable and costly. Many people hate this church. Many people wish this church did not call itself Christian or Anglican. Many people wish it didn't exist. And those who despise this place, what it stands for, and the leadership here, are much more publicly vocal than those of us who love it, defend it, or shelter within it. Yet such provocative hospitality is not an option. It's a given. It's not a choice. For it's part of our spiritual DNA. If we shut our doors on the equivalent of tax collectors and sinners, if we shut our doors on all whom the morality police are suspicious of, if we shut our doors on those who want spiritual sustenance but can't believe in Christianity's religion, then we are shutting our doors on the Sophia, the wisdom of God. And I believe our soul will eventually shrivel, harden, and die. For we are part of a tradition reaching back to Abraham, which not only welcomes the stranger, but experiences the inbreaking of divine grace in that welcome. At the Oaks of Mamre, Abraham and Sarah welcomed three strangers into their tent, and in doing so welcomed angels unaware. In Jesus' ministry, time and again, it was the cultural, political outsider or foreigner, like the Syrophoenician woman, like the Roman centurion, and in the early Jesus movement, like the Ethiopian eunuch or the Gentile Cornelius, who showed with their faith the way to God. In the tradition of the saints, there are many examples, but remember St. Christopher, who discovered the Christ in a child he was carrying. Children are nearly always political outsiders. And St. Damien, who met divine grace in the lepers he ministered among. Outsiders, foreigners, strangers, mediate the grace and challenge of God to us. To erect a fence to keep them at bay is to fence out the Spirit who wants to lead and broaden us into the kingdom of God. This last week I've been in Australia, where the discussion continues regarding asylum seekers arriving by boats. Both main federal political parties have a repel borders mentality. They are playing to the insecurities of those Australians who are fearful of the outsider and foreigner. And most Australian churches, to their credit, are challenging the politicians. For they understand that we Christians bear the name of the baby whose parents were told, "We have no room here for you." We are the spiritual descendants of asylum seekers. We know that national borders that allegedly protect us also hinder the Spirit of God who knows no borders. So when any fence is erected around a country, a church, or a communion table for the reason of protecting or preserving, our Christian DNA cries out in protest. We are likely to be fencing out angels, grace, and even the Spirit of God herself. However, not all outsiders are angels in disguise. And our first reading today gives us another perspective on engaging with a stranger and foreigner. For some outsiders want to stop us, prevent us, or divert us from following where we believe the Sophia of God is leading. They are blocking the road deliberately and provocatively. Grasshoppers on a journey when he's confronted by dogmatic mosquito. The mosquito's world is bounded by the puddle, the lake to him, a lake that he must control. The only way for grasshopper to continue on his journey is, according to mosquito, to fit into mosquito's boat. It's patently absurd. But the mosquito's vision is bounded by the lake. The mosquito's religion is lake religion, and the only way to be saved is by his boat. This scenario is very common for us here at St. Matthew's. Daily I receive emails from mosquitoes who say there's only one way to God, and it's their way. To be Christian, to be inclusive, they say, is to stop what I'm doing and follow their rules. This is, they say, the path of unity. That's a very important word for mosquitoes. It's almost as important as obedience. If I depart from their understanding of Christian religion and values, then I am departing from the way of Christ. So here is an outsider, a foreigner, who is not a diamond in the rough like Matthew. Instead, he has a small boat, a small lake, a small God, and a large and insistent voice. How do we keep true to our provocative hospitality DNA without succumbing to the mosquito's agenda, which is to stop us in our tracks? While it's attempting to swat 'em or squash 'em or spray 'em, Arnold Lapel's grasshopper finds a way to honor the inner dignity of mosquito while continuing to be true to his own calling to journey on. Mosquito lifts the grasshopper out of his paradigm, then gently lowers him again. But Mosquito is blind to it. He thinks he's won. His religion, he believes, has saved Grasshopper. Grasshopper stays in his boat and in his little puddle lake, trapped in his worldview as Grasshopper walks on down the road. For some characters, like Mosquito, they will not change. Rather, they have to be gently moved to the side or lifted out of the way in order that others can journey on. I like the grace that Grasshopper displays. Grace permeates both the story of Matthew and the story of Mosquito, as does discernment. Discernment is important in ascertaining whether the demand in front of you is a mosquito to be gently put to one side, or a compass suggesting you correct your course. A ministry of risky and provocative hospitality, vital as it is to our spiritual well-being, requires leadership that is both graceful and discerning. A sprinkle of courage and tenacity helps too. Grace and discernment are what I've tried to offer here in the last 9 years, and it's my hope you will continue with such leadership. In bidding farewell, I have a very thankful heart, full of memories of people, events, good times, and great times. And I leave to go on loving, sharing, learning, debating, provoking, laughing, dancing, wondering, singing, and even more loving, as I hope you will too. Haere rā. He hono tangata e kore e motu, ka pahau taura waka e motu. Unlike a canoe rope, a human bond cannot be severed.